Well, this, for those of you who are guests here, once a month we have a Bible study service, and today is the day. And we've been going through the book of Daniel, which we're going to complete today. The next Bible study will be on April the 19th, which is the weekly Sabbath during the Days of Unleavened Bread. And I'll be able to start into a subject appropriate for the Days of Unleavened Bread and the spring feast season. And but today I want to finish the book of Daniel and cover some things here. A lot of things I'm going to recap a little bit here as we get in, because we're up here at the end of chapter 11, starting in verse 35, and then chapter 12 is quite short. But a few things I want to pick up where I left off, because we came up with Antiochus Epiphanes and the first abomination of desolation. And that was in chapter 11 of the book of Daniel. And verse 21 all the way up to verse 35 had to do with the abomination of desolation. I've been giving some thought about this because we are going to touch on it again when we go into chapter 12, and I'll get to that a little bit later. There's some interesting things when you think back and kind of summarize in your mind about the book of Daniel. The visions or the dreams, either that he was given the interpretation of with Nebuchadnezzar, or the dream that he was given the interpretation of from God, or usually in another case from an angel, or from Gabriel, one of the archangels as well. They are the same subject each time, but with more information than was given in the previous time. It begins in chapter 2, and you have Nebuchadnezzar's dream that turned out to be a statue of a man, and Daniel was the one who interpreted the four great kingdoms that would exist down to the second coming of Jesus Christ. When you come to chapter 7, he doesn't interpret a dream, he receives a vision. And he has the four kingdoms once again, but now there's something new being added. A couple things are new that were added there. The second one, turned out to be the Medes and the Persians. And then the third one, the Greeks. A little more information was given in chapter 7 about them, just a sentence or two more than what was given before. And the one that really received more information was the fourth kingdom, which was Rome. That would have 10 kings, that would have a little horn that would be with it, and it would continue all the way down to the coming of Jesus Christ. Now, as we proceed on, guess what? We get a little bit more information. We go to chapter 8. And in chapter 8, we see something that we hadn't seen before. We have information on the second kingdom, the Medes and the Persians, who were conquered then by the Greeks, Alexander the Great. He dies, and his kingdom is divided four ways. What's new in chapter 8? The abomination of desolation. First time we see it. I'd like to go back and start there, and then I'll come up to where we're going to begin here today. Let's go to Daniel chapter 8 once again, because in all of these things, you have to look carefully. There is a dualism in the prophecy that is given, and to pick it out and to be able to see what is dual, what is historical, Jesus referred to this abomination of desolation in the book of Daniel. The only reference he ever made to the book of Daniel. And yet, the book of Daniel's prophecies are really incredible and exacting, coming to the time of the end. And, of course, we use the book of Daniel to understand much of the book of Revelation. They run together, talking about the same thing. In Daniel chapter 8, and in verse 9, "And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south and the east, toward the glorious land." We have to realize that this little horn is not the same little horn in chapter 7 accompanying the fourth kingdom. The fourth kingdom was Rome. Who are we talking about here? We're talking about the third kingdom, as you will see, which was Greece, and how that it would be divided after Alexander's death. The fourth kingdom doesn't come at this point. It comes later. So this little horn is a different one. It actually... maybe a type of the one back in chapter 7, or the one in chapter 7 in some ways might be a type of what this little horn could be too. But it will let the Bible, in this case Gabriel, give us the interpretation. So out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, toward the glorious land. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. Well, is that the first time or the second time? First abomination or second abomination? Obviously, no human being is going to trample down the angels, which are a type of stars. So there's some symbolism there, and whatever those things would have represented in that generation. Verse 11, he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, Jesus Christ. Now, it's interesting on the coinage, as I pointed out before, that Antiochus Epiphanes, you know, really magnified himself on his coinage in his time and his age, and put himself up almost as though he were a god himself. And by him, the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. Are we talking only about the time of Antiochus Epiphany in 168 B.C.? I don't think so. It is dual, as we'll see as we get over to more of the interpretation given by Gabriel. And we're talking also about one in a greater sense to come in the time of the end. In verse 13, then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And the answer, and he said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. Well, the margin will correctly tell you that it means the evening and morning, or not 2,300 days, but that would be 1,150 days, because you have the evening and morning sacrifices is what it's talking about. Now, I can't tell you precisely what that is exactly talking about. Is that going to be the count at the time of the end? How many days it will be cut off? I guess we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully, if we're here at that time, we will be waiting and seeing in a safe area and not near where it's taking place. Now, verses 15 down through 22, Daniel is given, Gabriel comes to him to tell him what it means. And he mentions there in verse 20 that the ram that you saw at the beginning of the chapter was the kings of Media and Persia. They are conquered in verse 21 by the kingdom of Greece, or Alexander the Great, as we know in history. But he suddenly died after conquering everything all the way to India and defeating the Persians. And so his kingdom was broken up into four kingdoms that shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. No, not with the power that Alexander had developed to conquer much of the known world at that time. All right, now let's take a look here at verse 23 on. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. Now there's a dualism here. Antiochus Epiphanes in 168 certainly fit the description. But what about the time of the end? Will we see another one like that? Is Antiochus Epiphanes a type of that which comes in the time of the end, and he will not be a Greek? See, Antiochus Epiphanes came from the Seleucids. Seleucid Nicator was the one who got the northern kingdom of Syria. Syria, of course, expanded all the way past Babylon at that time and in that age. Ptolemy, Soter, I think it was the first, he had all of Egypt, which was not the Egyptian boundaries you see today. It was much, much broader and much deeper going south. So here we, going on, verse 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive, and he shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people, referring to the Jewish people, because he is going to conquer and come into Jerusalem. Is this the only time? It certainly does apply, and Antiochus Epiphanes did this. But that was only the start. And the reason I'm taking the time, we need to recognize the duality of these prophecies that are being given. And, of course, Jesus Christ, he talked about the abomination of desolation like it was just one time. He didn't refer to the previous one. He said just the abomination of desolation. And so we look at this to see, and it gives us a little bit to understand what is to come. And verse 25, through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and he shall destroy many in their prosperity. The King James translation says, in peace destroy many, through peace, pretending peace, but not really peace. And he shall even rise against the prince of princes. Well, this has got to be talking, obviously, about the one who will fulfill the latter one. Antiochus Epiphanes, you might say in one sense, did rise against the prince of because he desecrated the temple, the Jewish religion, and all of that. But we're talking about something even more specific. Because we know in the time of the end that the armies are actually going to fight the second coming of Christ, and he will destroy them. So when it says here, in the vision, and he shall even rise against the prince of princes. Well, as we go to chapter 9, who's the prince of the princes? It's Jesus Christ. And I think we can begin to see on the latter fulfillment of the abomination of desolation that why Jesus Christ is going to throw the beast and the false prophet that he talks about there in Revelation into a lake of fire. I don't know that we really understand just how awful and terrible this is going to be. But there's so much, and the reason I'm going back is there's a lot to be said about the abomination of desolation in the book of Daniel. And Jesus refers to that. And as part of the warning that he gives to the church. All right, let's turn the page, chapter 9, the 70 weeks prophecy, which we've already covered. But just to bring to your attention once again, the last verse, 27. And the second half of verse 27. And on the wing of abominations shall be one who makes desolate. Makes what desolate? Well, obviously the altar and wherever the, I don't know if there will be a temple or not. We'll have to wait and see. It is not needed, just as there were sacrifices evening and morning at the time that the Jews came back from Babylon for 15 years because they stopped construction of the actual temple building. The evening and morning sacrifices are not inside the building. They're out in the open air on the altar, which represents God's table. So that we'll have to wait and see whether there will actually be. And it's very hard to envision or see how that could possibly happen without World War III happening. Because you've got the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount today. Now, if you're going to build a temple, they know where the temple, where the Holy of Holies was. It's the rock inside the Dome of the Rock. That was the foundation stone of the Holy of Holies. So I don't know how this is going to play out. We'll have to wait and see. But this is a very important thing in some manner or in some way when there are evening and morning sacrifices set up. And that tells us that the time is very, very near when that begins to happen. It seems to be a signal that you find here when you go through the book of Daniel. So we see it as just briefly mentioned there at the second half of verse 27. Now we go forward here to chapter 11, where I want to pick up here and start in today. We've already covered the portion on Antiochus Epiphanes, starting in verse 21. I'm not going to repeat that. There seems to be a transition, because I'm starting in verse 35. We see a dualism. Actually, you can back up to verse 32. The actual abomination you'll find is in verse 31 in Scripture, where it took place in 168 B.C. when Antiochus Epiphanes came into Jerusalem. He slaughtered, source said, over 80,000 Jews and sent over 40,000 other Jews into slavery and captivity. Certainly that would be a tribulation, would it not, for those people at that time. coming back here, let's just notice, I'll start in verse 32 instead of 35, just to show you that, again, the You can't just say absolute. There's dualism here when you look at it. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. Now, Antiochus did that. Is he going to be the only one who will do that? I don't think so. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. Well, exploits is added, as you can see there. Great and exploits both are. Is this talking about the church? Is this talking about Christians? As well as the Jewish people at the time of Antiochus Epiphanes? It could be both, could it not? And those of the people who understand. Now, do the Jewish people understand? In that time, there were those who understood, not like we do today, but understood as far as the Jewish religion and would not go along with the Hellenization of Judea. And they did understand. And they were trying, I guess you might say, to stay faithful to the covenant. Of course, this can apply to Christians, too, down through even the centuries, because that little horn back in chapter 7 has been very trying on Christians, especially during a period of 1,260 years. I'm going to come to that number, by the way, when we get here into chapter 12. Verse 33, and those of the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. That certainly happened the first time to the Jewish people in Jerusalem by the thousands. Verse 34, now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. again, as I explained the last month when we had this, one of the first fulfillments of that was the Maccabees. Once the Maccabees began to win, others began to start counting the cost, who am I going to stay with? And they joined up with the Maccabee family against the Seleucids, and in 3 years, they defeated the Seleucids and they cleansed the temple. Verse 35, and some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them, purge them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. Now this particular verse 35 certainly seems to be talking about not just Jewish people, who are going to, in this age, be refined. We don't see that. But certainly it could be church people here. It could be true Christians down through the ages, because it's for the time of the end. It's for still for the appointed time. You have some now transitioning as we get into verse 36. It can be both partly of 168. It could also be, more importantly, of the time of this end that we live in. All right, verse 36, now we move on. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper. This seems to be beyond Antiochus Epiphanes. This seems right here to be the transition to the time of the end of a different individual. We do not see in the history of the first abomination of desolation that Antiochus went quite to this extreme to do this. And until the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. Going on, he shall regard neither the god of his fathers nor the desire of women. Now, Antiochus did regard the gods of his fathers, the Greek gods, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above them all. He will be supreme. He will be God, you might say, and put himself up there. But in their place, he shall honor a god of fortresses, which we've always believed is Satan the devil. The book of Revelation says that's where they get their power. That's where it comes from. And a god which his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. I don't know. Is this something that he will bestow upon the little horn that will be with him? That may well be the case. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance its glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and divide the land for gain. Now, we'll have to wait to see how that's all going to play out. What is it talking about? It's not talking about the past here. It's talking about the future. We've jumped ahead over 2,500 years. And now we come to verse 40. At the time of the end, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Okay, the king of the south were the Ptolemies of Egypt, anciently. And the king of the north were the Seleucids, but now they don't exist anymore. They don't exist as far as king of the south, king of the north, in the sense that they did historically. But they're used as a type of that in the time of the end. And so the king of the south is going to attack the king of the north. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and he shall pass through. Immediately, is it a counterattack? Or are there years in between? We don't know, do we? We don't know. What kind of an attack would it be? I think I've mentioned to you before some of the things that the Muslim Brotherhood has said, and which were in Dory Gold's book. What was the name of his book now? I forgot it. I have it at home, but I've quoted from it. He used to be the UN ambassador for Israel, and they always believe that the path, first of all, to Jerusalem is through Cairo, and they also believe that they must attack both Rome and Istanbul. Islam must destroy those religions in competition. Would that be an attack against the king of the north? If that ever happens. I mean, they are very open about that, by the way. That was taken right off Al Jazeera radio or television, whatever it was, where the person just openly said so. And so, I mean, it's not just something that was hidden back in the corner and we have no source for it. But people have, I don't know. Now the Muslim Brotherhood has been overthrown in Egypt. Maybe it was not the time. Something we have to look at and consider. Maybe it's not the time. It may be later. Everything, and of course you see in the book of Daniel five times that term, at the appointed time, at the appointed time. So God knows when the appointed time will be, and I think it will happen very suddenly, very quickly when that time has arrived. Verse 41, the counterattack by the king of the north, he shall also enter the glorious land. He comes with many chariots and horsemen with many ships, and he shall enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through them. Absolutely, you don't read of the king of the south anymore, do you? He is totally destroyed by the king of the north. He enters into the glorious land, which is what? The state of Israel. Now, there has to be some real changes that are going to take place between now and this appointed time, because the state of Israel is a very powerful country. And they can defend themselves quite well. what's going to happen? That do they allow the king of the north just to pass in to Europeans to give them some sort of peace, thinking that will give peace? I don't know. because nobody's going to pass through Israel without a major battle and fight today. And they are quite prepared, and they are very, their intelligence systems are very, very good. I do not think they're going to be caught off guard. like I think the United States, many times we let our guard down. But the Israelis have too much at stake, but something has to change. For what? Evening and morning sacrifices for the king of the north to be able to, well, first of all, for the king of the south to attack the king of the north, and then for the retaliation and going across North Africa into the glorious land. That's what fooled Mr. Armstrong, of course, or made him think that, well, his generation was that time when he saw Rommel's armies crossing North Africa headed toward Egypt and Israel. Or, of course, it wasn't called Israel then, Palestine, and the Suez Canal and everything. And for a while, he thought, well, that we were at the time of the end, and that it was all going to come about. Of course, after the war was over, he kept saying when Germany was in rubble that they will rise again. And people laughed, I guess, at that time, thinking that'll never happen. It wasn't too long before they were totally rebuilt under the Marshall Plan. All right, verse 41, and he shall enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. Why? Why do they escape? They're surrounding the glorious land. Some of these people may make up what today are the Palestinians. is the king of the north going to give control to the Palestinians? That's the modern name. The ancient names here, Edom, Moab, and Ammon, we know a lot of those are descendants today of the, what makes up the nation of Jordan. But man's borders do not mean that the ancient people or those who are descended from them are all within those borders. I obviously spew over into other lands too. Verse 42, he shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. All the way across North Africa and then all the way down to Ethiopia along. Look at this, the strategery of this. Because you control the Red Sea. Ethiopia is along the Red Sea, south of Egypt, Eritrea and Ethiopia, down to the Horn of Africa there and all of that. there's a lot more here at stake than just a matter of just running over a few countries. These are strategic areas that he would have control of. Libya is a strategic area in the north of Africa and the area of the southern Mediterranean. Verse 44, but news from the east and the north shall trouble him. In the Hebrew language, there is no word for northeast. That's why it says east and north, which means northeast. Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, Jerusalem, in Jerusalem. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. So how does he come to his end? Second coming of Jesus Christ is how he comes to his end. Now we get into chapter 12. Now man put the chapter breaks here, and of course added numbers you don't find in the scrolls, numbered verses or numbered chapters. But it is a natural break here to start chapter 12 with. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. Now, where do we read that in the Bible? The Olivet Prophecy, right? Isn't that what Jesus said? Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, 22. Quite interesting, and those who have God's Spirit are those who are written in the book of life, written in the book. How do you know your name is in the book? If you have the Spirit of God in you, you are in the book of life. Now, hold your place here. Let's go over to Isaiah 26. Isaiah 26, and notice a little something here. In Isaiah, 26, and in verse 19, if your Bible has subtitles put at the top, which are put in there by the publishers, mine says A Song of Salvation. And maybe you have it, maybe you don't, above 26:1. And really, because that's a summarization of what this chapter is about, as the publishers see it. And look at verse 19. Your dead shall live. Well, that's the resurrection. Together with my dead body they shall arise. Awake and sing, you who dwell in dust. For your dew is like the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. this is talking about the resurrection. The second part of that verse there, together with my dead body, referring to Christ who was raised. Now look at verse 20. Come, my people, enter your chambers and shut your doors behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation is past. The abomination of desolation is what this is. For behold, the Lord comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. That's called the day of the Lord. The earth will also disclose her blood and will no more cover her slain. So here Isaiah is seeing really what he's talking about. Yes, God's people will be protected. He said he would. He looks out after those who he has chosen and will watch over them. And what we see here in chapter, coming back to Daniel 12 and in verse 1, has to do, of course, with what's in the Olivet prophecy that Jesus Christ spoke of. A time such as never before, nor ever shall be again. An incredible thing. And it centers at Jerusalem. This abomination of desolation, the evening and morning sacrifices, all of that has something to do. I don't know if we can fully comprehend what the two beasts, that's what the book of Revelation says, the two beasts, Revelation 13, the political and the religious beast, they are going to do something there. It's not just a matter of conquering land, but desecration of religion and against God and Jesus Christ. And they are going to be punished, I guess, in view of everybody else when Christ does return. Now, verse 2. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. So, no question about the timing here, is it? It's the coming of Christ. Some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine. I might mention before, back up to verse 2. Jesus said this very similarly, and we use it a lot of times in a funeral address. It's in John chapter 5 and in verse 28. All will be resurrected, some unto everlasting life and some to everlasting, as it should be, judgment, not damnation. But judgment is what that Greek word actually means in John chapter 5, verse 28. And this is very similar to it here in verse 2. Talking about the time of resurrection when Christ returns. Those who are wise shall shine. Now, who do you think the wise are going to be? Those who have the Spirit of God, those who are come under the new covenant by obedience to God the Father and to Jesus Christ, and who believe and who live and serve God in that way. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. The stars forever and ever are type in Revelation chapter 1 and in verse 20. Stars are a type of angels. Angels do not die. They are extremely bright in their, unless they manifest themselves as human beings to come to us. But in their normal state, they have great brightness too. And we, and as it says right here, will be shine, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Yeah, that's right. Live in absolute brightness of light and energy forever. What an incredible thing when you think about that. And we look at our frail bodies, and as we all get older here, and we have all these things catch up to us, and... Well, the wonderful thing is that God has called us and drawn us to his Son and brought us to conversion and given us his Holy Spirit upon repentance, baptism, laying on of hands, all of that, and given us lots of time and mercy and growing with that Spirit to overcome that, you know, sooner or later, we can't live forever in the flesh, but we can be assured and know our names are in the Book of Life. And that when that time comes, we will have not just everlasting life, but, I mean, it is light. That's why he uses light versus darkness in the parables and so on in Jesus' ministry. Because he represents, and literally, not just only representing it, eternal light and energy and power that is so bright that a human being could not look on it and live. It is so bright. And so... What an incredible thing with such power and ability that he will give to us puny little human beings. And we really are puny compared to that kind of energy and power that it talks about when we are changed. Verse 3, those who are wise shall shine. I'd say I read that already. verse 4, but you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. If you wonder whether we are or are not in the time of the end, stop and meditate, think a little bit about all the knowledge we have today compared to 50 years ago, 100 years ago. I mean, man in general, that we can see in our own lifetime. It is an astounding thing. We can get so busy in life. And many things to do, we don't stop to think about these things and meditate on just where we are compared. You know, I enjoy reading history, and I'm sure you do too. I like to watch things on the History Channel. I like to watch things sometimes from the era of the Revolutionary War in this country, or even the Civil War. I find it very interesting. I also find it interesting to look at how primitive their knowledge was compared to what we have today. In general, not just only in this country, but in general all over the world. It's an astounding thing. I was watching something here recently just about that had to do with Edison and J.P. Morgan and Tesla and the discovery of electricity. We have alternating current right here today, right? We do not have direct current, which is what Edison, by the way, used. He was financed by J.P. Morgan. And then J.P. Morgan let finally, and they separated, and he went with Tesla and an alternating current. But it was interesting watching this. I was on the History Channel, I believe it was, or Discovery, one of those two. I had not seen all the details of how that all came about and what it meant, how it changed the world at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And to stop and realize the electricity. If Paul, which was mentioned here in Accord, or any of the apostles were here today, they'd probably be standing there staring at these lights and looking at everything here, and they probably would even be looking at the materials used here to build this building and wondering, what is it? How do you do that? Over here, these musical instruments and everything. What is that? Or even showing this thing up here on the screen. They might rebuke a demon or something, thinking. We just take it for granted, don't we? What we have today, and all of this has come when? Basically, sometime since the Second World War, except for the electricity, is the turn of the century, and actually before the turn of the century, back 1880s, 1890s, right in that period of time. But you could go on and on and on some of the things that we just... the way we live with it every day, it's like as though we think it's always been here for all eternity, or what all of man's experience, and it hasn't. It's only come here in what the Bible calls the latter days. Knowledge shall increase. Such a simple sentence and statement that has it's so incredibly large. Verse 5, then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank and the other on that riverbank. And one said to the man clothed, and really was a canal there in Babylon off of the Euphrates River. And one said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? And then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, which he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever. And, of course, that one is primarily referring to Christ, that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time, and when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Now, how do we know it's 3.5 years? Time, times, and half a time. This expression is used in Daniel, where is it back in the time of Nebuchadnezzar when he lost his mind? He was seven times were used there. One of the best ways to look at these numbers and How do we know? We've always said it's 3.5 years, that it's 1,260 days, and that it represents 42 30-day months. Now, if we go, hold your place here. Let's go over here to Revelation chapter 12. We can see it all in one chapter. Now, times and half a time has a dual meaning. Sometimes it means 1,260 years, not days. And you have to look at the context here to see which one it is. Let me get to it here, Revelation chapter 12. And in verse 6, the woman, representing the church, fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days, 1,260, which is divisible by 30 to come up with how many months? 42. Now drop down to chapter 13, verse 5. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. This is the beast. And he was given authority to continue for how long? 42 months. We had 1260 in chapter 12, verse 6. Chapter 13, verse 5, it's now 42 months. Now go back up to chapter 12 again in verse 14. The woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for what? A time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. It's all speaking of the same thing, isn't it? 1260, 42 months, 30 days in a month. So it means that time, times, and half a time is either 1,260 years prophetically, which, by the way, is what it's talking about in chapter 12, verse 6 that I read just a moment ago, or it's talking about literally 3.5 years, which, coming back to Daniel 12 and verse 7, is talking about 3.5 years. Time and half a time, or 1,260 literal days. Now, how can I say that? Well, look at verse 1. All of this is going to happen. How could it be 1,260 years? There would be nothing left for Christ to come back, if it, based on that description in verses 1, 2, and 3. Now, if we read on, we'll see some other numbers here as we finish the book of Daniel today. And comment on three sets of numbers. I'll tell you what they are: 1260, 1290, and 1335. What does it all mean? Well, I'll tell you as best as we know at this time. Can't say that it's the absolute final answer. Is this your final answer? Well, no. I do leave it open because maybe there's more things that we're yet to learn. So let's take a look here. Let's go on to verse 8. Although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Okay. Many shall be purified, white, and refined, that is, converted, and receive God's Spirit. But the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Those who are converted, those who are following God, they will understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Wow. So what does that mean? Verse 12, blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. But you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise. He's not going to go to heaven when he dies. He's going to go to the grave, and he's going to arise in the resurrection to your inheritance at the end of the days. The church has always understood, and I believe we can safely say that it is correct, that those days obviously do not begin at the same time, but they all end at the same time. And that time is the second coming of Jesus Christ. The 1260, the 1290, the 1335 ends all at the same time. So that means the 1335 starts first, followed by the 1290, followed by the 1260. And then they all end at the same time when Christ returns. Well, we know what the 1260 is for sure. The time of great tribulation, the time, times, and a half a time, the 42 months, and so on, as we see in the book of Revelation, and appear in verse 7. But what about the other two numbers? Well, let's take the big one first. In verse 12, it says, blessed, blessed or happy is he who waits. For what? Well, it seems to me to be obvious, the coming of Christ. Who's waiting for the coming of Christ? And what does that imply in that waiting? We find in Revelation 3, and is it verse 7? I may have that wrong. Let me get the right verse for you quickly. Not verse 7, verse 10. Because you have kept my command to persevere, or the word of my patience, if you're reading the Authorized King James, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those that dwell on the earth. Now, the point of this verse 10 of Revelation 3, that the church here is waiting because you have kept my command to persevere and do what? Obey me. Keep my command. You haven't given up. You haven't turned away. You have patiently done that, continued in those things. I'm going to protect you, he says. All right, let's go back here and look at Daniel 12 again. So blessed is he who waits. Is the world going to wait? The unconverted going to wait? No. It has to be talking here about the church, the converted ones, those who have God's Spirit, and comes to the 1,335. Now, the difference between 1,335 and 1,290 is 45. That's 6 weeks, isn't it? The church has speculated and wondered, is this the period of time that God allows to take his church to wherever he wants them to be protected? We can't say dogmatically, and that's why I make that clear. But that is what we have always in the past. I have yet to see anything to change that, but I'm not saying that cannot be changed with new things that are revealed later. But at least in the 40 years plus that I've been in the church, that possibility has continued to be the same, or thought to be the same. All right, now, but what about that 1290? And from the time that the daily sacrifice, notice that, the abomination of desolation. Do you know something about this? It's not the one back in chapter 11, is it? This is one in the future. This is one at the second coming of Jesus Christ. So we have in the book of Daniel two abominations. One spoken of, certainly in chapter 8, referred to at the end of chapter 9, and spoken of more specifically and how it was would be carried out in chapter 11. Now we get to the end of chapter 12, the longest prophecy, continuous prophecy in the Bible. We find there's going to be another abomination of desolation. So from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Well, obviously, 1 month or 30 days between 1290 and 1260. Is that the period of time that the king of the north, or the beast, will enter into the glorious land and surround Jerusalem, as is described in Luke chapter 21, when you see the armies encompassing Jerusalem? Now, there has to be some time involved there to do that. That is a possibility, that it is the time of the destruction of Israel and Judah. It may be that's been the speculation that we have thought it was referring to. And then, after 30 days, begins 1,260 days of tribulation, in this world, Satan's wrath, which will include in the last year, God's wrath, or the day of the Lord. That is the best that we understand of it at this time. We haven't seen anything to change that. We'll see. Will there be something else to come along? So don't say, now the church is absolutely saying this is how it will. That's our best, we believe, educated guess based on Scripture and things that we see in the Bible. But we're not going to just go out and say dogmatically this is exactly how it will end up in that way. All right, that ends the book of Daniel, and next month we're going to get into some things having to do with the spring feast on the Bible study on the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. So we will finish and close here and have a final song and prayer.